Hello and welcome to the Persephone program for April 22nd, 2024. Today is Earth Day, and it also happens to be Passover. And I'd like today to read my chapter two from my book, Capricorn Rising and Astrological Life on Taurus. We're three days into Taurus season, or the approximately 30-day time period of Taurus. And if you haven't read my book, or maybe even if you have, I would love to talk about Taurus. And I think that one of the best ways to do it is to just kind of read from the book. So I hope that you enjoy it. If you haven't got my book, you can buy it on Amazon. It's often discounted for like less than $12. There are exercises in it. There are learnings and teachings on astrology, and there are stories of my life. So here's a little bit about my grandmothers, about Taurus and my chart, and the themes of Taurus from my book, Capricorn Rising and Astrological Life. Chapter 2, Taurus, I Have. Believe in all the good things that money just can't buy. Then you won't get no bellyache from eating humble pie. Eat the Rich by Steven Tyler and Joe Perry. Steven Tyler, Venus, North Node, Taurus. It's night and I'm walking slowly through the living room of my grandparents' house. Several lamps create pools of light in the darkness, revealing small vignettes. A collection of brightly painted porcelain birds on a gleaming antique side table. A silver thimble and scissors next to an unfinished needlepoint of a still life. A cut crystal vase filled with yellow garden roses. It's very still, with the exception of the large ticking mantel clock. My bare feet move silently over the plush Persian carpet. And through the tall paned glass windows, a black dog in the backyard watches me with glowing eyes. He whimpers to come in, but I dare not open the door. I have had this dream many times before, and I know that I am only safe inside. In the late 1950s, both of my grandfathers moved their wives and children to what is now called the Silicon Valley of California to work in the aeronautical industry. My maternal grandfather, Gus, was employed as an engineer for Lockheed Missiles in Space, working on the Moon program and later Hubble Telescope, while my paternal grandfather, Morgan, traveled for Amp Electronics. They both ended up buying homes in Los Altos in the Santa Clara Valley, only blocks away from each other. It was there that my grandmothers met and struck up a casual friendship. Early on in their relationship, my maternal grandmother, Helen, found out that her new friend Eleanor's husband was physically and mentally cruel to her. In the years that followed, which included my parents meeting in college and marrying, Helen bravely helped Eleanor plan an escape from her abusive husband and then testified in court in my grandmother Eleanor's defense in order for her to obtain a divorce. These actions from both women took a lot of courage in the conventional and somewhat misogynistic environment of upper middle class suburbia in the early 1960s, which at that time required proof of cruelty or misuse for divorce. I recognized early on that both my grandmothers were brave and both also very physically beautiful, but my father's mother, Eleanor, was truly stunning. She was a gracious Southern lady raised in Virginia near the Chesapeake Bay, an earthy Taurus sun, born in the month of May, with the planets Mercury and Venus also placed in Taurus. Her voice was gentle and low, with a slight soft Southern inflection, and she had a lovely heart-shaped face with deep-set cornflower blue eyes, prominent cheekbones, and a long, elegant neck. It's hard to understand why her husband was so cruel to her, as she was also exceptionally kind. Her true passions were fashion, beauty, food and wine, music, and the sensual pleasures of life. I have a favorite photograph of her from the early 1970s, which perfectly captures her spirit. She's sitting on the deck of a sailboat with sparkling water behind her, wearing bright red lipstick, a giant dark sunglasses, and a large wide-brimmed floppy sun hat, smiling to the camera with a raised glass of wine in hand. Eleanor and my maternal grandmother, Helen, happened to be born almost exactly 6 months apart in 1920. Helen was a cool blonde, a patrician WASP from Toronto, Canada, who, while living temporarily in Los Angeles in her teens, eloped with my grandfather right after graduating from Hollywood High. Nana inherited her mother's talent for interior design. My great-grandmother was a female pioneer in flipping houses in the 1920s, and she was a leader in her local Women's Federation League, plus several other social clubs. Nana had a tendency to be very discriminating with both people and situations, to the extent of behaving pretentious at times. She would raise her chin and narrow her eyes at anything or anyone that didn't measure up to her exacting standards. My mother joked that any of our family's discriminatory behaviors or judgments came from her Helen Smith Brady snob gene. Nana was strong in character with a will of steel. She'd sweep into a room to show off jewelry she'd actually purchased for herself, proclaiming, "Look what your grandfather has bought me." Her sterling silver tableware and servingware were always polished, and she was always shopping for new furnishings, clothing, and the latest in kitchen gadgets for her well-appointed home. Visiting my grandparents in childhood was a marked contrast to the life I led with my mother. Mom had made many sacrifices for her independent lifestyle. One was financial. My brothers and I were raised with love, but as money was usually tight, not a lot of things. Our home was always about freedom and art, rather than comfort and luxury. So it was a marked contrast to go from the simple hippie or bohemian lifestyle in the woods of Santa Cruz to ordered suburbia at our grandmother's. Unlike my mother's carefree counterculture ideals and funky bohemian taste, both my grandmother's households represented more bourgeoisie values, which was fascinating to my childhood senses. I was keenly aware of the comfort and even luxury present in the home of my grandmother's, and I reveled in it. They both decorated in traditional styles that emphasized beauty and security. They had crisp cotton sheets on the beds and plush carpets, sterling silver and English bone china. They both had closets of designer clothing and high-end cosmetics. As a child, I remember being in awe of the beauty that they created and nurtured with their personal styles and environments. My mother's own style leaned towards natural wild curls, no makeup, Indian print long dresses. So it was fascinating to watch my grandmothers both dress up in silks and suits, pantyhose, high-heel shoes, to watch them apply their careful makeup, drying their lips with bright lipstick, and to accompany each of them to the beauty salon where they had their hair done weekly. There are many points that entwine both of my grandmother's astrology with my own, and most prominent are the connections in the earth element sign of Taurus, the second sign of the zodiac, ruled by the planet Venus, with dominion over the midpoint of spring, a time of abundant sensuality, beauty, and fertility in nature. In the natal chart, the second house is the natural house of Taurus, and we begin with the first house as Aries. This place, or arena of life, is about our possessions, the resources we bring to ourselves, create, or innately own. It's real estate, our money, our five senses, and the things that we value. The second house is also called a succedent house, as each quadrant of the chart begins with a cardinal, or action-oriented house, followed by one that is stable and fixed. With Capricorn rising in my own chart, Aquarius, the freedom-loving water bearer, is ruler of this place. The sign on the cusp of each house in your natal chart can indicate your personal style in regard to the house's life experiences. It's interesting that my mother had a distaste of materialism, and this seemed to bring freedom and vitality to her. She preferred to live life as a bohemian and was decidedly anti-bourgeoisie. Perhaps I picked this up. My early home life was filled with what was important to my mom, her friends, music, ideas, and especially the freedom to live as she pleased, regardless of convention. Perhaps it was a rebellion for her from her own upbringing or just her essential nature. Regardless, my childhood and own chart reflects her values. And in many ways, I've personally struggled with pursuing and preserving money and luxuries for myself. My two grandmothers' synastric astrology, a technique where we compare individuals' planets and points with each other's charts, included their suns in opposition, Taurus and Scorpio, and the nodes of the moon also in the Taurus and Scorpio axis. I also share their nodal position, but opposing theirs. All the zodiac signs and the chart houses have an important relationship with their opposition or axis, as they really kind of function as two halves of a whole. We see this especially with the nodes of the moon. Astronomically, these are actually points in space which are found where the Earth's orbit around the sun, the ecliptic, is intersected by the moon's orbit around the Earth, the ecliptic. Astrologically, these points are very important, representing archetypal solar and lunar impulses. They are one's dharma and karma. Pioneering 20th century astrologer Mark Edmund Jones called them the axis of fate. And in Vedic astrology, they're called Rahu and Ketu, the dragon's head and tail. An interesting visual image to further visualize past and potential personal self-development. The idea here is that we eat the things represented by the north node in our charts, or the dragon's head, and we release them at the south node, or the dragon's tail. My grandmother's south nodes were placed in Taurus, which brought in the energetic style of this sign to their life's foundation. It was innate for both of them to seek pleasure and comfort in the natural world of the five senses, in the things that they owned, in luscious food and clothing, in their possessions and beauty. It's not surprising also that my Nana Helen's south node happened to be exactly placed on, or conjunct, my grandmother Eleanor's Venus, also in Taurus. When individuals have personal planets or points connected by a close geometric degree in their chart, it's an indicator of work to do together. You can see that there were contracts here, what you would call karmic, and more between the two women. Raised in different countries, they actually seemed born to align. My own north node, representing that which must be brought into and self-determined in one's life, is at Taurus, 14 degrees. This is very close to, conjunct, as we say in astrology, both my grandmother's south nodes in Taurus, as well as my grandmother Eleanor's Mercury and her Venus. In addition, my south node in Scorpio, representative of the past, or karma, was conjoined with my maternal grandmother's sun and both my grandmother's natal north nodes. Many of us will relate in our lives to the things that are connected to the expression of our south nodes. In my grandmother's case, they lived their lives in very Taurian ways, choosing to focus on the material world with its beguiling charms and sensual comforts. Research into the nodal position in your own chart will bring a load of interesting insights, especially around energetic styles or behaviors that need to be released through the south node and developed by the north. This was something I was learning to do with my north node in Taurus, and it wasn't easy for me. My grandmother's lifestyles illuminated a path. Actually, I was always torn between the values, another Taurian term, of my mother and my grandmother's. I agreed somewhat with both of their priorities, yet how could I reconcile my desire for freedom from convention and the burden of making and dealing with money with the attraction and desire for comfort and security that money and possessions actually brought? Essentially, you could say there was a lot of karma with my grandmother's, and honestly, it felt that way in my life. I was really very instinctively connected to them both. There was a sense of deep belonging that I just felt in their presence, and I knew that they were guides to me or role models. My grandmothers both had this ability to carve out for themselves a fulfilling life regardless of circumstance that I really felt so drawn to. Fragments of dreams remembered in life brought me visions of other lives with them and other roles. One of the first that I ever experienced was a dream that I had as a very young girl, where my maternal grandmother, or Nana, was my mother. The dream was like a memory or just an excerpt of a life. I saw myself in it as a young woman at a dance, dressed in the formal clothing of centuries ago. My grandmother, as my own mother, was extremely angry at me for not dancing with a certain man, a rich older suitor who stood nearby. I understood somehow that this was a match that she wanted for her own and our family's fortune. I saw and sensed the desperation in her eyes, and I also knew then that I was a commodity to her. Rebellion at the time was fruitless, and I felt despair that my own flesh and blood would trade me for her own personal security, wealth, and means. The dream wasn't far off from my current life at times, as my grandmother often fought with her own daughter, my mother, for control over me. She wanted control over how I dressed, how I was educated, and more. She wanted her family to reflect her own values by being conventional in behavior and appearance, by being materially successful and attractive according to her tastes. My mother had resisted this conformity, and now she looked to me to fulfill the role of what she understood as successful progeny. "Stubborn Taurus," my mother would exclaim. Taurus's mode is fixed, the expression of the middle of a season. The sign is measured, it's methodical and enduring in character. Taurus's color is green. Its bodily rulership is the throat and shoulders. Tauruses can tend to be slow moving. As sensual as the sign is, its energy can sometimes also be inert. This is where the Taurian nature can tend towards gaining and adding. This could include weight gain too, which is something strong planetary placements in Taurus especially need to guard against. Taurus's staying power, however, can be so strong that it can dig a rut into personal habits, lifestyles, and more. In medical astrology, I mentioned Taurus rules the throat, neck, and ears, as well as the thyroid. Flexibility of motion within these areas helps Taurus to stay balanced and keep flowing. Taurus placements in a chart can bring physical beauty and definitely a love of it. They can have a gorgeous voice and a knack or desire for making money, for real estate, and all the sensual world. Planets placed in this sign demonstrate staying power. Yet, if you have them, you must develop ways of sharing and flowing in order to stay healthy and balanced. Taurus can sometimes be very focused on accumulating and accumulating things. It is a very sensual sign. My grandmother Helen at one time in her life owned multiple vacation properties as well as her own tastefully appointed home. My grandmother Eleanor was the general manager of several luxury department stores in San Francisco. Her living spaces were always filled with her beautiful clothes, dozens of samples of high-end cosmetics and perfumes, and beautiful trinkets. Venus is the planetary ruler of Taurus, as you will remember Mars was of Aries. Venus is also the brightest star visible in the night sky, and its astrological definition includes attraction and relatedness. Venus and Taurus are organized astrologically as feminine yin or night sect in Hellenistic astrology. In the progression of our story and astrological lesson, we're now moving from masculine or yang principles of Aries to the feminine or yin principles of Taurus. Remember that we all have the balancing forces of active and receptive in and outside of ourselves. One of the most interesting aspects of Venus as a planet is that it also has different ways to express itself in our night sky. Venus has an orbit that, like Mercury, lies within our Earth's. It also forms two special geocentric conjunctions with the sun, which make it appear, disappear, and then reappear in different points in the night sky in relation to the sun. Over the years, this pattern makes a five-pointed star or flower in the sky through its movements. Perhaps the beauty of this appearance and movement is why Venus has always been associated with the great goddess in myth and religion. The morning star is the phase of Venus that is visible in the very early morning sky. In astrology, it corresponds to Venus in the element of Earth as Taurus, and it's focused on development of self-worth and the enjoyment and abundance of the natural and sensual world. Astrologically, this Venus is also called Venus Lucifer, or Lightbringer. This energetic type of expression is emotionally eager, focused on self-esteem and spontaneity. A natal Venus in Taurus, like my grandmother Eleanor's, is similar, with the focus on attracting things like assets, goodies, and sensual treats. I do remember as a child fondly spending the night with my grandmother in her soft bed, which was covered in tiny pillows, gazing at her sparkling vanity filled with crystal perfume bottles. To determine your personal Venus expression, check your chart and see what sign and degree your Venus is in relation to your sun. If Venus is before your sun by sign or degree, you have a morning star. If it's later than your sun by sign or degree, your Venus is an evening star with a focus on bringing sensual energy to relationships and ideals. Although the Hierophant in the Tarot is associated with Taurus, and it does work with Taurus's structured or fixed approach to life, I find the Empress card is a truly wonderful representative of Taurus's feminine energy. In the card, a divine goddess sits on a throne decorated with the glyph for Venus. She wears a crown of 12 stars, demonstrative of a bright Venus star status in the heavens. Her gown features the pomegranate, both invoking the myths of Ishtar Inanna and Persephone. These goddesses' myths and worship also represent how the ancients connected the movements of the planet Venus and her appearance in the heavens. When I was about 12, one of my grandmother Helen's friend's daughters made a trip to San Francisco, and she wanted to visit me. This was a spoiled girl, a year older than me. She had a princess bedroom, a four-poster bed that nobody could sit on, and I was pushed often to spend time with her when I spent my holidays and vacations with my grandparents. This was the first time she had visited my mother's home. When she arrived at our place in San Francisco, she looked around shocked as she surveyed our old flat with its peeling paint and dingy furniture. She whispered to me, "I didn't know you were poor." I knew then that I would never agree to spend any time with her again, even as I knew also she was right. For much of my childhood, I felt that somehow our little family of four did not have enough, and this fact frightened me. Regardless of the love that I did feel from my mother, I knew that we were lacking. We sometimes didn't have enough money for a car or a vacation, and we just didn't have the abundance of the material life like my grandparents did. Truly, sometimes I felt physically safer with them rather than in my home with my mother and brothers. The comfort and security I felt in my grandparents' home as a child, surrounded by the solidity, sensuality, and just comfort of their possessions, created a kind of unconscious safe haven in the deepest part of me. I have a shaky alliance between the value of asceticism and abundance in my life. I'm still fascinated by luxury, even as I decry materialism for its own sake. Understanding my own need to create some of the domestic security I felt from my grandmother's lifestyle created new insights regarding my own North Node in Taurus, and how Taurus placements activated this need for physical and sensual security. I dream regularly of my maternal grandparents' home, where I spent so much time in my childhood and felt so secure. Both my grandparents passed away there, in the home, and my mother ended up moving there herself to care for her father after my grandmother passed away. In dream symbology, a house represents the dreamer, their psyche or soul, and a childhood home is often indicative of the values of family and their place in one's life, as well as how that shapes our beliefs. What's interesting is I rarely dream of my grandparents themselves. It's just me alone in their house, grappling with some kind of foe or circumstance outside. I've interpreted this as my grandparents' values and choices as a subconscious safe house from the threats, real and imagined, of my own life's experience, which have included the hardships of not having enough. I was very aware that their life was comfortable and secure. Their life was ritualized in layers of privilege, partially based on their choices and values. As I've aged and moved into a more comfortable life for myself, I found a balance or compromise between my mother's and grandparents' legacies. I've tried to create some security and comfort with my career and relationship choices that allows me some freedom. This is reflected in my North Node's journey. I recently asked my partner, who shares a North Node in Taurus placement, what he wants from his future. "Peace and tranquility," he quickly answered. "Yes," I said. "That's it, not a small part of Taurus's gifts." Taurus Venus second house exercises and journal prompts for you. Number one, where is Taurus in your own chart? Are you perhaps stubborn and less flexible there? What can you do to create more flexibility in this arena of life? Where is your Venus? Is she before or after your sun sign by sign or degree? What about the idea of self-love and/or love for others? How is this at play in your own chart? Also, how do you bring Taurus's love of beauty into your life? What sign is on the cusp of your second house of possessions and resources? What things do you possess? And what is your relational style to your possessions? Thanks for listening to this short excerpt from my book, Capricorn Rising Astrological Life. Thank you for your understanding, because I am not editing any of this. And you can see that because it's spring, I have allergies and I may have stumbled over my words, but I hope it's brought some food for thought. What a Taurus, Taurian term. Some food for thought for you on this lovely Earth Day, and that you have a wonderful and fertile Taurus season. Many blessings. There is a full moon on the 23rd, and then on May 6th, 7th is the new moon in Taurus, which is really the best time for doing some new moon initiating energy. I will be speaking with my friend B, the Zine Witch, at the Zine Witch on the new moon. We'll be talking about the new moon. We'll be talking about astrology. We'll be talking about Jupiter and Uranus and Taurus. So do tune in later. Sending you many blessings and much love.